Now this particular chapter which is there before us, is entitled Rebirth and Other Worlds, Karma, the Soul and Immortality. That is the subtitle, you might say.
I think we'll do well.
Now, I propose to read the very first line and leave for the moment this article for a special purpose. It says, our first conclusion on the subject of reincarnation has been that the rebirth of the soul in successive terrestrial bodies is an inevitable consequence of the original significance and process of the manifestation in earth nature. Now this is a difficult sentence and it refers to our first conclusion which has already gone before this particular chapter. So I thought it would be best if I gave you in one paragraph where this conclusion has been arrived at in the previous chapters. So I'll give you now a one page only, but the last paragraph of a chapter prior to this chapter, and that chapter is entitled The Philosophy of Rebirth, simply. Next to that is another chapter called The Order of the Worlds, and then is this chapter which you are going to read, Rebirth and Other Worlds. So these three chapters are actually constitute one totality. But to read all the three chapters would have been a very difficult task, and much of it is largely philosophy. I thought this last chapter is perfectly good, provided that we read this one paragraph from this earlier chapter. Now in this one paragraph which is there, Sri Aurobindo sums up the philosophy of rebirth. On what basic data can rebirth be inevitable? This is the question he puts in this chapter and proves that these being the data, these being the facts, rebirth becomes inevitable. Now he sums up the whole thing in one paragraph. So we shall read this paragraph. I shall first read the whole paragraph, whether we understand it or not, or whatever we understand, then we shall go back to it. This then is the rational and philosophical foundation for a belief in rebirth. It is an inevitable logical conclusion. If there exists at the same time an evolutionary principle in the earth nature and a reality of the individual soul born into evolutionary nature, if there is no soul, then there can be a mechanical evolution without necessity or significance, and birth is only a part of this curious but senseless machinery. If the individual is only a temporary formation, beginning and ending with the body, then evolution can be a play of the old soul or cosmic existence, mounting through a progression of higher and higher species towards its own utmost possibility in this becoming, or to its highest conscious principle. Rebirth does not exist and is not needed as a mechanism of that evolution. Or if the all existence expresses itself in a persistent but illusory individuality, rebirth becomes a possibility or an illusory effect, but it has no evolutionary necessity and is not a spiritual necessity. It is only a means of accentuating and prolonging the illusion up to its utmost time limit. If there is an individual soul or purusha not dependent on the body but inhabiting and using it for its purpose, then rebirth begins to be possible, but it is not a necessity if there is no evolution of the soul in nature. The presence of the individual soul in an individual body may be a passing phenomenon, a single experience without a past here or a future. Its past and its future may be elsewhere. But if there is an evolution of consciousness in an evolutionary body and a soul inhabiting the body, a real and conscious individual, then it is evident that it is the progressive experience of that soul in nature which takes the form of this evolution of consciousness. Rebirth is self-evident. It is as necessary as birth itself, for without it, birth would be an initial step without a sequel, the starting of a journey without its father steps and arrival. It is rebirth that gives to the birth of an incomplete being in a body its promise of completeness and its spiritual significance. Now this paragraph is difficult, but once we analyze it, it will become quite easy. As I said, Sri Aurobindo takes all the possible data and then derives a conclusion out of it. There is one simple data before us, and that is the data of the facts that life has evolved in matter and mind has evolved in life. This is an indubitable fact. In any case, we find the human body, which is indubitable, you cannot doubt the human body exists, that's a fact. And we find that this human body is first of all material, it has pulsation, and it is capable of thinking. These three facts are joined up together in this particular human body, this effect. Now, according to the modern theory of evolution, this coming together of these three things in man is because of a long process where first there was only matter, for a long time there was only matter and there was nothing else. Then in some insignificant corner a germ began to pulsate. Out of that, many life forms came up. Varieties of life forms, millions of them. But these life forms had no intelligence in them. A blade of grass, for example, has no intelligence in it. Bacteria have no intelligence in them. But gradually, in some of the life forms, some kind of intelligence begins to appear. Some kind of mind begins to appear. And then when we come to the human being, human body, mind as a power of conception becomes very clear. So these are the three steps which have come up according to the modern theory of evolution. Matter, life, mind. Now since we don't see the soul, so the first data would be that we see only matter, life and mind. And we don't see any soul at all there. So he says that if there is no soul, then there can be a mechanical evolution without necessity or significance. And birth is only part of this curious but senseless machinery. We do find that birth is a very curious phenomenon. As Sri Aurobindo says at one of the places, birth is the first mystery by which human beings are intrigued. And death is another mystery which reinforces the mystery of birth. So, birth may remain a kind of a mystery, or one might even say senseless mystery, because there is nothing fundamental to look into. This world is just like this, a manifestation of matter, life, mind. And it is like you prepare hundreds of dishes for a feast, and then somebody comes from the neighborhood and says, "What have you done? Have you invited thousands of people?" And you suddenly reveal that nobody has been invited. So this big feast then seems to be senseless, meaningless, has no significance. Whenever we use the word significance, there is a special meaning in it. Significance means significance for the experiencer. All significance in the world is a significance for the experiencer, for the enjoyer, for one who is going to enjoy. If there is nobody to enjoy anything, it has no significance. You may write 20 books, but if neither you enjoy them after reading them, after writing them, nor if anybody else is going to read them, it's a senseless much exercise. It may be there, it's not there, it's not impossible. The world may be like that, the world may be a senseless mechanical necessity in which these things are happening, but it has no significance. That's what Sri Aurobindo says. If there is no soul, then there can be a mechanical evolution without necessity or significance, and birth is only part of this curious but senseless machinery. Right? If the individual is only a temporary formation, beginning and ending with the body, then evolution can be a play of the old soul or cosmic existence, mounting through a progression of higher and higher species towards its own utmost possibility in this becoming, or to its highest conscious principle. But rebirth does not exist and is not needed as a mechanism of that evolution.